session number 23215, Reel 6.
Major Woodgate, Reel 6.
You were telling me where you got to on that deployment into Belgium. Where did you get to when you deployed to stop the German push the Ardennes?
We were up in Marche. And the Americans had 82nd or 101 division to bending a place called Bastogne, I think it was. I remember James sending them a wire to say how well they'd done. Of course, he got very friendly with the Americans, 82nd and 101, and also got very friendly with Colonel Sosabowski, the Polish commander. Every now and then, before D-Day, one or two Polish officers would turn up, nobody would, having told me, and expect to... We put them up at headquarters for a week. And also, they also immediately wanted to do a parachute jump. They were very nice, but this whole thing was always happening. About a week before D-Day, of course, we had a commando liaison officer, Haig Thomas, jumping with us. So we gave a cocktail party at our headquarters. Lord Lovett came and all their officers. It was nice to meet them all. But I had an old godmother living in the New Forest who had a very wild husband, and I'd been riding my bike with him down a road in the New Forest, he making hunting noises, and I fell over my handlebars and I cut my hands terribly bad. I thought I wouldn't be able to go on D-Day. Very worrying. And I always remember we had this cocktail party the day after I had this awful accident. Anyway, it cleared up all right.
What impression did you get of these Poles?
Mm?
What impression did you get of the Poles?
Oh, lovely. They were lovely, yeah. They were rather demanding, but we enjoyed having them.
Did you meet any of the Americans?
Oh, yes. Well, on the Rhine crossing, we were flown by the Americans.
I was thinking about the American paratroopers, the 101 and the 82nd. Did you have any contact with them?
Well, not all that. James got to know them, but we didn't have any staying with us or anything like that. They flew us very well on the Rhine. We took off on the Rhine crossing. We were stooting round, forming up. And then my plane suddenly turned back. And the pilot got out and said, oh, go stay in. And he did something, well, I think it was the landing wheels or something. We took off again and got in exactly the right position that we'd been in before. How on earth he did it, I don't know.
Must have flown faster to catch up.
Yes, must have done. Well, of course, when you're stooging round... you don't fly at all that speed.
No. I mean, when they were forming up, they'd be flying rather slowly, wouldn't they, before they set off.
Yes. When you're dropping, you drop down to... It's rather a menacing sort of feeling when you hear the engines dropping down to 100 miles an hour, and you're looking at this wretched red and green standing at the door.
When you say you went out to the Ardennes and you went out by sea. Where did you land when you went out?
I think it must have been in Antwerp. Mm.
And how did you get forward from Antwerp?
Well, our transport had come out. Oh. And we initially went into a monastery. Mm. A nunnery and monastery, whose name I've forgotten, it'll come to me in a moment, where we were for a day or two. And while we were there, I thought, oh, I must try and go, and it was quite near the battlefield of Waterloo. But I didn't manage to get there. And then we went gradually up to into the Ardennes themselves.
Did the brigade actually deploy into defensive positions at any time?
yes, but quite where or how, I don't know. Yes, but I don't think they were actually fighting. The 5th Brigade had a very bloody battle at Bures. I'm trying to think of the name of the monastery. I can't. But that was the bloodiest battle the 5th Brigade had. And then things calmed down in the Ardennes. In fact, James organised some winter sports.
Did you have any special equipment for the cold weather?
No.
You didn't? No.
Except I had a hood put on my... regimental tailor put a hood on my smock.
Yes.
No, we didn't. No. It was very cold. I was very impressed on these snowy roads. The Americans, mostly black drivers, absolutely thundered along. What would have happened if they put their brakes on? I said, goodness,
they'd have skidded all over the place.
Quite incredible.
Did you have any problems with supply and resupply on that sudden deployment across to...
Not really, no. Mm. No. Well, things had got very organised by then. Mm. And as I say, we had Larry DuBarry as DAO and QMG. No, the RSC was working all right. I don't think it was any difficulty. And then when the things had calmed down in the Ardennes, we went up into Holland on the Mars. And that, it was snowy there. And of course, when a thaw came, all the roads collapsed. So it was very, very difficult.
What were you doing up there on the Mars? Were you holding?
Holding a line of the river, yes.
Was there any activity going on?
Well, patrolling activity, yes. And James thought up, he wanted to send some chaps over in boats one day. And I had to go to a local monastery and arrange for the chaps who were going over to have a thoroughly good rest in the monastery, and that sort of thing.
Do you remember what happened on that expedition?
No, I don't. No. And then from... we were in a village called Heidsweisen. It was there that James's daughter was born. And we acquired a YMCA van. Two very good chaps ran it. They came and fed with us in the mess. And then when we, in February, we went to Ghent, and then we flew back to England, and we left all our transport in Belgium or France or Holland. And I said, oh, we must, so this YMCA, we must keep you, we've been so good, and that sort of thing. And then after the Rhine crossing, which I was still staff captain, I went back to meet all the transport. And of course, this wretched YMCA van was still there, and it was hopeless in mud or anything like that. So the beastly thing kept getting stuck. I wish to goodness I'd never said, stay with us. When I went, after the Rhine crossing, I went back to meet our transport coming up over the river. And I met a reporter. And he sent a report back to the, I think it was the Evening News. I've got a copy somewhere. My old godmother had gone into Bournemouth that day, quite unexpectedly, bought a copy of the paper, and was able to tell my parents that I was still alive. Quite extraordinary, really.
I mean, were you able to keep in touch at all by mail when you were in the field?
Yes, you had postcards. Mm. You could cross out, I'm still alive, I'm wounded, or what have you. And I'm afraid one was very bad. One was so busy that I wrote very infrequently. Mm. I should have written much more. Very bad. And, of course, one was writing to people who'd been killed, you know, writing to their next of kin and that sort of thing.
When you were on the Maas and you were keeping busy, were the Germans also patrolling and carrying out?
Mm.
You said on the Maas, James Hill was anxious to put... He sent a party across the river.
Yes.
Were the Germans doing the same kind of thing?
I don't think so, no. Mm. I don't remember any coming over by boat. Mm. But if it had been an odd sort of party, I wouldn't have known, really. Mm.
So you got back to England in February 45, and you said you were preparing for the Rhine crossings.
Yes.
Operation. What did you do in preparation for that operation? What did you do in preparation for the Rhine crossing? What sort of?
Oh, we had a very big exercise called Biz 1 and 2. Mm. One was us, and one was Fire Brigade. It was over the Thames. That's when I nearly went into the Thames. But fortunately I didn't. I went in somebody's greenhouse instead. Mm. That exercise went well.
Where were you flying from for that?
Oh, airfields in East Anglia.
Yes. So you're flying from East Anglia. Your landing zones in Kent?
I'm sorry?
Were your landing zones in Kent? When you're flying from East Anglia and you were jumping...
Yes.
Where were your landing zones? Were they on the other side of the river in Kent?
Just by the River Thames.
Yes.
By, what's the name of that town? Abingdon. Just by Abingdon.
Ah, so that's Oxfordshire.
Yes.
So you weren't flying sort of directly south from East Anglia.
No.
Southwest.
Yeah, southwest, yeah. Yes.
How did you manage to nearly drop in the Thames then? What went wrong on that jump?
Well, I suppose the Thames was the Rhine.
Mm.
And I was a bit early going out of my plane.
Mm.
It was a good exercise. It went well. And the aerodromes... The transit camps were up in East, quite near where my parents were. I billeted the James with a vicar, who was a very mothy old vicar, and I don't think James liked that very much. He's a very religious person, I don't know whether you know that. And he goes on retreats at Christmas now, and that's all. How long ago did you see him? Oh, you saw him in Brighton?
1982.
Yes. Well, of course, he's been remarried since then. His first wife, mother of his daughter, was a nice person, but she was very silly. She thought all James's friends were stupid, and she didn't like army things and that sort of thing. I think he must have found her very, very irritating. And eventually they split up. And then he lived in Brighton. Then a year or two after, he remarried somebody quite younger than him, who looks after him very well. They're living now in Chichester, as you probably know. No, Beard, those exercises went well. We didn't use the same airfields and transit camps. The one transit camp we used on that exercise was quite near to where my parents were. But for the Rhine crossing, we were ones much nearer down. Mm. Can't remember which way we were now. And as I say, we were flown by the Americans.
Were you flown by the Americans on the exercises as well as on the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Before that, we'd done a big mass drop near Bulford, on the Winterbourne Stoke DZ.
Yes.
And that was the first big mass drop there was, of which I got photos. That went very well.
Was that brigade scale or divisional scale?
I think it was... I would say offhand it was divisional.
A very large tale indeed.
Yes, it must have been. The thing I remember most about it, James would insist on the... So we had bicycles which we used to fling out. And he would insist on me having one of these beastly bicycles. And he always says, I threw the thing out at Amesbury, which is a few miles.
A long way before the jump.
Yes.
Were these the folding assault bikes?
Yeah, folding bikes.
Yes. Yeah.
Which are not very difficult to ride, actually. Mm.
Why are they so difficult to ride? What?
Hmm?
Why are they so difficult to ride?
I don't know. And another thing that was, of course, we're always inventing airborne equipment. Another thing that wasn't much use was little motorbikes. Mm. I think they're called well bikes. And they were not much use. They wouldn't go over rough ground. And those we used to drop from... Of course, we had kit bags, which you attached to your leg. When you got out, you let the thing down. And they were a bit of an administrative nuisance. So a lot of swinging out of the plane with this piece of attached to your leg.
What would you put in the kit bag when you were going out?
Well, I personally had all my bits of bump.
You had your satchel with your...
Yes. Incidentally, I used to put my spectacles on after I'd landed. Mm. Of course, there weren't many people who had spectacles. One or two people I know who had used to, I think, put sticking plaster and keep them on in that way.
Yes.
But there would be great danger of them blowing off. Mm. I think I did it the better. They're army specs, you know, steel things.
Steel rim.
Mm.
There'd be a risk of them breaking as well, wouldn't there?
Well, that's true, yes. Mm. Yes. Yes. No, they managed very well. Well, then we dropped over the Rhine. Yeah, it was very interesting. I always say, whether it's true, I can't remember. But standing at the door, I could see the guns firing, our guns from this side of the Rhine, and see them landing on the other side. I think it was probably true.
Well, you could certainly probably see the flashes, yes.
Well, that probably was merely a flash, yes.
What time of day was it when you arrived?
Oh, in the morning.
Yes.
About 10 or 10.30 or something like that.
Of course, in the previous operation you'd done, it was night, wasn't it?
Oh, that's right, yes. Yeah. Yes. Of course, with this mass, the Americans followed their leader.
Mm.
So that if he went wrong, I don't know what would happen. But it did mean that daylight drop, following the leader, where most of the parachutists were dropped in the right place.
Well, you're all in the same place as well, so...
Well, that's right, yes. But the air landing brigade... cut a terrific stick with anti-aircraft things. That was, they had a great lot of casualties.
What was the drop zone like then across the Rhine compared to the one in Normandy?
What was it like?
Yeah.
Well, it was flat sort of country.
Mm.
And then the rendezvous was in a wood quite a long way away. I was foolish enough to I met a Remy chap with an enormous kit bag. I thought, well, I must help him carry this. And I wish to God I hadn't. It was, I never had anything so heavy. How on earth he managed it in the aeroplane, I can't think. Then we got held up. I got shot through the helmet, actually.
Where was that? On the drop zone? Or
on the drop zone. Well, going off the drop zone.
Oh.
And then that sort of one got rounded. Got to brigade headquarters. And formed up there. And then we moved off from there. And we were in some farm buildings at night. Terrific bombardment. And I found myself sheltering with a sapper chap, who actually I knew quite well. He was in our squadron. I discovered that I'd been at a dame school with him, which is a funny place to discover it. And then the DAAG had been killed on the glider, so then became DAAG.
What were the functions of DAAG? What did you have to do?
Oh, personnel.
Yes.
And bumped personnel, courts martial, reinforcements, prisoners of war, padres, all the same sort of thing as staff captain.
Now, you're landing in daylight. Does this mean that it was easier to get the brigade headquarters together?
Oh, yes.
The Wine Crossing.
Oh, yes. 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 Very much. Yeah. Yes. Well, we lost our Brasker. He got killed.
So you'd been staff captain at brigade headquarters, and then you were suddenly shifted to division headquarters.
Yes.
Yeah. What was that like compared to brigade headquarters? What sort of scale? What was the difference in scale and strength? And
well, of course, there are much more people about the place. And I shared a caravan with an old friend of mine called Cliff Norbury, who lives in Camden, actually. And I had a staff captain A. Yes, there was much more paperwork. Mm-hmm. After the Rhine crossing, I didn't do another parachute jump. I'm not a very enthusiastic parachutist. And I thought, having got away with it on two operations, unless anybody ordered me to, I wouldn't stick my neck out. And so it was. I didn't go round and see. People came to me rather than going to see them.
Well, that's a contrast, isn't it, to brigade level?
It is, really,
at brigade
yes.
level, you've been going out to battalions.
Yes.
All the time. Divisional level, presumably brigade staff are coming to see you.
Yes. Yes.
Now, you said you were in a caravan. How had that caravan arrived? Had that come in a glider or had it been delivered?
Oh, that was with a... You see, when we came back from Belgium and Holland,
yeah.
we left all our transport.
Yes.
I think it was in Belgium. Mm. And that came out. I went back... That's what I went back to meet coming over the bridge over the Rhine.
I see. Yes.
And that was had the caravans.
So you landed with the brigade, then you were called to division. Was that immediately after you'd landed?
Well, a day or two after.
A day or two after.
Yes.
What was happening that first day or two while you were still with the brigade?
The battalions were capturing villages and towns. I remember 9th Battalion capturing, I can't remember what town, and an old friend of mine coming out from my house saying, oh, would you like 6 eggs? And giving me 6 eggs. Mm. And really seeing what was happening, helping the DA and QMG, who was a very efficient chap. And so my duties as staff captain were much lighter than they had been in Normandy.
Did the headquarters of the brigade come under attack at all during that time across the Rhine?
Not only under bombardment in these farm buildings on this first night or second night or whatever it was.
Nothing like the 12th of June?
Oh, no, nothing like that at all. No, no, no.
So you went back, and what was in this caravan? How was that set up and organised?
Hmm?
You mentioned the caravan
at yes.
division headquarters. What was in the caravan? How was that equipped? For
oh, it was rather good. One had a desk. Mm. And one slept in it. And it was one's general home, really.
Was it in the open, or was it dug in, or was it protected in some way?
Well, when the headquarters moved, of course the headquarters have a defence company, as you know, and so and a camp commandant, so that one's caravan moved with the generals and the G caravans, and one just went on with one's work and what one was doing. And of course, the battalions were capturing towns. And
well, when the headquarters settled down,
yes.
Did you just have your caravan out in the open with the others? Or
yes, yes.
You didn't have it camouflaged or concealed in any way.
Oh, well, yes, one did move under trees and camouflage it a bit. And of course, if you were anywhere near a town or anything, you probably moved your offices into a building of some kind.
Did you have any contact with the civilian population?
Well, we had a military in Normandy. We had a civil affairs staff officer, a Canadian, who was a great pal of mine. And in Normandy, in Germany, he became a military government officer. And so, really, all dealings with the civilian population were through him. Every now and then one got involved with them. For instance, in Wismar. Of course, when we got to the Baltic, we were in Wismar. Somebody came around one day and said, oh, there's a German shot himself in a house. So I had to go around. German had shot himself, his wife and all his children. That sort of thing was going on all the time. And, of course, unfortunately, in Wismar, one had quite a lot of courts martial to deal with. Of course, people would do silly things like raping somebody or something like that. And we had to get a judge advocate to sit on the courts. And we had an excellent chap called Edward Clark, later was a judge at the Central Criminal Court. I got very friendly with him. He sat up, you know, late hours in the evening with paraffin lamps, with courts martial, because we had to get the piece of things dealt with quickly, because the evidence was probably there. And we knew that 6th Airborne Division was being kept. 1st Airborne was being disbanded. They were in Norway. And we were going to the Far East until they dropped the atom bomb.
When were you first warned that you might be going to the Far East?
Fairly soon, really. Perhaps we knew first that we were being kept and one airborne was being disbanded. And I would have thought about that time. We knew that we were going to the Far East. And we wanted to get these courts, because it all fell on me to reorganize the division as DAAG. And I wanted to get these beastly court martials done and get back, because the division had started going back to England. And I was left on a limb trying to get these courts martial out of the way.
Was this after VE Day?
After VE Day, yes, yes. On VE Day, we had a service in the local church, which I've got a copy, and James organized a 3-brigade victory parade through Wismar. I remember taking the general along to see it.
Who was the general? Was that still General Gale?
Eric Bowles.
Oh, Eric Bowles.
Eric Bowles came out to Palestine with us.
Oh.
But then he was sent to the Imperial Defence College.
Yes.
And Jim Castles came. And
right. Now, you haven't mentioned disciplinary trouble before. Did this sort of disciplinary trouble start after the war was over, or did you have a lot of it during the...
What, courts martial?
Courts martial and disciplinary trouble.
Oh, well, no. Really, it was after the war. Mm. Yes, after VE Day.